Sam, thanks for taking out time on what we know is probably one of your busiest, if not your busiest day of the year. So thanks so much. How are you feeling heading into the big day?
Well, I'm pretty pumped. I kind of feel, I think I feel the same excitement as some of the kids out there. It's been waiting and waiting and building, two phases of the lottery, and finally we're here. So I'm excited. It's a real passion of mine, and I appreciate the comments, David. But I'm super pumped for tonight and to add Mike Fuda to our show along with our existing crew with Berkey and Elliot and Merrick. We could not have assembled a better panel.
Yeah, it's gonna be very exciting, and we got you covered on all grounds. So talk about the preparation, because what I have a binder. I get made fun of at work. I have a binder with the 31 teams. I have my information. I find it fairly easy to keep up with 31 NHL teams. You're meanwhile chasing 17-year-old prospects around the globe, right? It's not just the Ontario Hockey League, the Q, you have the BCHL, the Alberta Junior League, NCAA, and of course all these prospects out in Europe. How do you prep for a show like tonight and for the whole process, the months leading up to tonight?
In the typical year, David, you try and keep an eye on the next year's group with the under-17s, and then they come into fruition the year of the draft as they grow a year older. From there, you kind of take it from the Hlinka-Gretzky. We've been lucky enough to have the schedule, have it in Edmonton a couple of years ago. It was supposed to be back here this year. That didn't happen. World Juniors, I'm usually part of our coverage there. That's a big piece of it. Our Canada-Russia series, our top prospects game in the CHL. And then a lot of video work, phone calls, text, emails with scouts, agents, and, players' families, if you can get in to know the player that deep with those that are in Europe. So it really is kind of a year-long thing, and you just keep building the book. I don't profess to be a scout. I do like to see as many players as possible with my own eyes in live situations, and I hope that corroborates my conversations with the scouts and with the experts. And most of the times, that's the case.
Sam Cosentino getting set for tonight's big draft coverage, 7 o'clock Eastern on Sportsnet. Go ahead, Justin.
Sam, in looking over your rankings, one of the things that stood out to me as just a little bit different from a few other places is you have Jake Sanderson ahead of Jamie Drysdale. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what you see in those two guys and why you think they're ranked the way they are on your list.
Well, I think they're inches apart. I think they're a 1 and 1A combination, and if I were a general manager, I'd be extremely happy to have either one. Typically, the edge normally goes to the right shot defense, and so that's Jamie Drysdale, and that's where I'll start. You know, the foundation of his game is a great skating ability and his ability to process the game at the same pace that his feet move. So I think the most impressive part for me is when I watched him play, basically as a 17-year-old, at Canada's World Junior Camp against the U-Sport Stars, guys that are 23, 24, 25, and they were coming after him hard. I mean, they were putting it in his corner, and they were coming after him hard. Yet, quick shoulder check, assess the options, get back with the good feet. Either I'm going to transport it out of here, or I'm going to make a little shimmy shake and find that available open guy, be it up the boards, through the middle of the ice. So really, really impressed there. And, of course, he made Canada's World Junior team. And when he got big minutes there, he played extremely well. Great year with Erie. Jake Sanderson is a little bit of a different guy. He's 6'3", he's 180 pounds, he's a left shot guy who created a great foundation with his defensive game at the start of the year. And then I think he took it upon himself, realizing that the U.S. under-18 program wasn't nearly as skilled as it was last year. They had to win meat and potatoes, ham and egg type of thing. So he took it upon himself to play a more offensive role, point per game pace down the stretch of the last 12 games, and was really building towards the under-18 championships. Didn't get that opportunity, but left a beautiful lasting impression as a big two-way guy, the same type of guy that was really successful in a prototypical mode in the NHL playoffs this year, and that's why I slightly inched him ahead of Drysdale.
Berkey. Berkey, you there? Oh, we might have lost Berkey.
So he doesn't want to talk to me. He'll get enough of me tonight.
Here I am. Sorry.
there he is. Here we are. Go ahead, Berkey.
Sorry about that. So, Sammy, I was going to ask you, and Jake Sanderson's a great example. These kids have had basically 4 months to do nothing but bulk up and prepare. So we had Jake Sanderson at the start of the year at 6'1", 190, like you said, or 185. He's now up to 6'3", 205. I checked with his dad the other day. that's one thing. We're interviewing these kids. They're all 10 or 15 pounds heavier than the weights listed.
Yeah, and that's a huge thing. And for the guys who are playing, not only have they added to their frames, their strength, but now you're getting to see all the work on the skills and the skating that have come to fruition over the course of COVID for those players who are either playing in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League or over in Europe. So, you know, there is that thought that there are going to be some players that have that edge, and probably later in the draft, you'll see a few guys sneak into that first round that I think might not have had that same opportunity if they weren't playing and if we haven't seen, you know, but we've seen them now go through a long period of time where they could train and now get back on the ice. So it's going to have an impact for sure.
Yeah, there's going to, I imagine, be some guesswork just because it's such a unique year. You didn't have the combines. You weren't able to physically get close to these guys. It's been a lot of Zoom calls, et cetera. It's a little bit more guesswork maybe for the GMs and head scouts on the organizations. Sam, since this started out, it's sort of been three names undisputably at the top. You know, obviously Lafreniere, Byfield, and is Stützle, give us the pronunciation.
Yeah, Tim Stützle.
Okay, so those three atop. When you look at these three, do any of them have a higher ceiling? We know Lafreniere is undoubtedly looking like he'll be the number one pick, but when you look overall, is there a higher actual ceiling maybe for one of the other two?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think when I look at Stützle and I look at Lafreniere, I think we're closer to realizing what those guys are going to be in their NHL careers. What they do now is likely going to translate to what they're going to do in the National Hockey League. The guy of great intrigue to me is Quinton Byfield. At 6'4", 215, he really still looks like a kid. So I think he's probably going to play anywhere from 6'4", to 6'6", and probably play at 230 to 235. So that's a scary proposition to think that this big and strong kid who skates well, who has awesome hands, has the potential to grow and play at that weight. You're not going to be able to get the puck off him. He's going to be great in the net front because he's got such good hands. And the fact of the matter is, here's a guy who skates extremely well for his size. So he's going to be a real difficult load to handle. So in terms of that growth potential, the upside, the ceiling that you talked about, David, of the three, I think he has the highest, but I do also believe he's the furthest away from that.
Interesting. JB.
I'm looking, you know, sort of just past those top few guys. I'm looking at a couple other forwards who have interest, and you know, you've done some great work on Cole Perfetti. I saw the Sportsnet piece you did on him the other day. It was just fantastic. Wondering the comparisons between him and a guy like Lucas Raymond, who I've also seen described as having an extremely high ceiling given their talent. Maybe you could tell us about those two forwards, who you see going higher there, and what you like about those guys.
Well, I have Perfetti going to Detroit. I just think there's too many connections there, but I don't think you'd go wrong with either guy. And I do believe that anywhere after 3, right on through to 10, Berkey says to 12, and I would agree with that sentiment. I'd feel more comfortable in 10. So getting back to Lucas Raymond, it's the same sort of thing. Last year playing the SHL, he averaged about 9 minutes per game. So that sporadic ice time didn't allow him to do what he normally does with his peer group. Having said that, you're calling it his peer group, but he's always played a year up. So even last year at the World Juniors, he's playing as an underage player. You go back to 2 years ago at the under-18s, again as an underage player, gets a hat trick in the final game to beat the Russians for a gold medal there. At every single level in which he's been close to his age group, he's performed at a top-notch level. So he has all of those things, the skating ability. He's a guy that really dances around, is on his feet. He's light on his feet. He's a really good playmaker, amazing vision. Cole Perfetti is the same way. Cole Perfetti might have a slight edge on Raymond only because some people see him playing center down the road. When I look at Perfetti, though, here was a guy who took his World Junior, what he perceived was a World Junior snub, and went back and was lights out down the stretch for Saginaw. He was over 2 points per game, second with 111 points in the Ontario Hockey League in scoring. And when you see this guy's ability to anticipate, to process the game, to read the game, especially over inside the offensive blue line, I don't think there's anyone that matches him there. Raymond might be close, but I don't think anyone matches Perfetti from the blue line in. He's that smart, he's that creative, and he's that confident with the puck to be able to hang on, delay, or wait patiently for the open option.
Berkey.
Yeah, Sam, let's explain that 3 to 12. So normally in a draft, we used to call them ledges. So you'd say 1 through 3, then there's a ledge. And then normally there's two or three players. Then there's another ledge. And players, teams would say groupings of players, whatever. We always called it a ledge. And the teams I've talked to, they marvel at, in this draft, there's no ledge to 12. Maybe it's 10, maybe it's 11. But you can drop down if you're picking 4th, 5th, 6th. You can drop down a couple picks and still get one of that group that you have rated as identical in terms of potential.
Yeah, no question. In fact, I got off the phone with a scout this morning, and he said the very same thing. But, I mean, everyone's anxious. They want the known. What's going on? What are you hearing? Who's going to get taken in front of us? That sort of thing. And, you know, it's rumor and innuendo. But by the same token, everyone wants that certainty. And I said at the end of the conversation, I'm like, what are you worried about? Just wait to see who falls to you and then go with the next guy on your list. You're going to be laughing. So it was a pretty funny end of the conversation. But, yeah, I love this group. Give me Jack Quinn. Give me Anton Lundell. Give me Holtz, Raymond, Perfetti, Drysdale. Give me Sanderson. I mean, I would be extremely happy with any of those guys and their NHL prospects moving forward.
We're listening to Sam Cosentino, who, of course, will be a big part of tonight's coverage on Sportsnet at 7 o'clock Eastern, the NHL entry draft. Jeff Merrick hosting alongside Brian Burke, Elliot Friedman, as well as Mike Fuda, and, yes, Sam Cosentino, and we'll be covering the seven teams as well. Sean McKenzie with the Maple Leafs. We'll see what they do at 15. I want your opinion on the 2015 draft compared to this draft. Forget about Connor McDavid. He went first overall. We're not arguing there's a Connor McDavid generational player necessarily getting selected tonight. But when you look at the first round after McDavid, you had Eichel. I'll just name some of the best players. You had Eichel. You had Mitch Marner. You know, Hanifin, Provorov, Werenski, Timo Meier, Mikko Rantanen, DeBrusk, Barzal, Kyle Connor. You get the idea. Thomas Chabot, Brock Besser. Do you think that, I mean, and there's still Travis Konecny. I could keep going. But bottom line, those were all first-round picks. Do you look at this draft? Because I've heard the same thing that Brian just, alluded to. The depth, and I think I heard it maybe from you, Sam, and from others. Do you get a feeling this could be similar to that draft without the crown jewel of McDavid, but just incredible depth and NHL-ready players?
I do think it can be similar in terms of the end result. When you go into that draft and you're looking at some of those players, I thought there was less certainty about that top grouping of players. And so you might look at a guy like, you know, Pavel Zacha, for example, or a Noah Hanifin, and you might say that's slightly a touch below the rest of the class, but still really good guys that are playing over 300 games. So obviously they're doing something right. But I think there was more certainty. I think there's more certainty about this class. Obviously, time's going to tell about that top grouping than the certainty going into 2015. You know, having said that, it's a pretty special group of players, and here they all are now. You know, maybe Zaboral hasn't quite panned out. Vaccination hasn't quite panned out the way that they thought, but you're always going to get your hit and misses. I just feel that there's more certainty going into this one than there was going into that one.
Sam, there's never certainty when it comes to goaltenders, and this is a year that we have rumors that we may have a goaltender drafted in the first round. What can you tell us about Yaroslav Askarov? How high do you expect him to go?
6'3", 180, right catch guy, really aggressive, never gives up on the play, and many people believe he's not only going to be a franchise-changing goalie, but by far and away, the best goalie that this draft class has to offer. I think the bidding for this guy opens up beginning at the 5th pick, Ottawa's 2nd pick, and right on through to 15. And you could identify a number of teams that would have a need, but you have to beware because, let's face it, these guys are going to take 3 to 5 years before they're going to have an impact on your NHL team. Ilya Samsonov is the perfect timeline. You go back to 2015, taken 22nd by Washington, 3 years finishing up his contract in the KHL, 1 year in the AHL, and then last year a 16-game winner with Washington, and likely the guy who's going to take over for Braden Holtby down the stretch here. Then even Vasilevsky, it took a little bit of time for him to get over and to assimilate himself as the number one guy. So it requires patience to the nth degree if you're going to take a guy that high. For me, I would prefer it if I were in a multi-pick scenario. That way I could still nab one of these really good guys in the top 10. So Ottawa, I think, starts to be that target at number 5.
Berkey.
Yeah, some caution here for people who are listening. Since 2013, only 3 goaltenders have been taken in the first round. The highest was 13th overall, Spencer Knight. Now, they all look like they're going to be stars, but you got to have a few years left on your contract if you're a GM who takes a goalie real high.
Although Vasilevskiy went first, right? He was in the first round, I mean.
He was a first-round guy. I think by the time he played NHL games, and I could be wrong, I want to say the general manager at the time was Jay Feaster, if I'm not mistaken. And I think it was probably Steve Yzerman who watched them come to fruition. And to Berkey's point, those last three goalies taken in the first round, two of the general managers, George McPhee, and the other one being Dale Talon, are no longer with their teams before that guy actually played an NHL game. So Jake Oettinger and Jim Nill are still together in Dallas. And, you know, you might not have seen Oettinger if Bishop was healthy. So it does take time. You got to have patience. And like Berkey says, you better have some years left in your deal.
You're setting the table. Someone else is going to eat the dinner.
Oh, man. Sam, we'll leave you with this. First of all, thanks again for taking the time. Sam Cosentino, very busy man today as he's the draft guru over at Sportsnet. And do you have a sense of what LA is going to do? Because that's where the real intrigue starts, with that number two pick. Could they slide down?
I don't think the slide down is
the option. If Ottawa's dying to have a certain player, have they identified which of the two, you know, they're hotter on? Okay. So what do you think might happen here?
Yeah, well, Pierre Dorion, he's sitting in the catbird seat here. He's got to be loving his entire life right about now. But I look at, they're not going to go wrong either with Stützle or Byfield. I mean, the general thought that I had would it be Stützle, only because I think he's a little bit closer than Byfield in playing NHL games. But having said that, if you're really excited about the upside of having a big center, which every team is, then maybe if you can show that patience, you're not worried about cap issues here over the next couple of years, then Byfield might be the guy.
And the intrigue of having Kopitar mentoring and grooming Byfield, I mean, that's got to maybe weigh into this equation as well, right?
Well, I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, I do have a ton of faith in what DJ Smith and his coaching staff and their ability to develop players, but it's always nice to have that guy on the ice or in the room with you who can mentor you, and that's going to be a home run, whichever guy they take. I would love for that guy to be an example for me as a player, and I think he's able to kind of pass the torch, and whatever LA is going to do with either one of those guys, it's going to work out in terms of the mentorship.